Hey, welcome in. Your boy Doug Gottlieb here, and this should have been a podcast which previewed the 2020 NCAA tournament. And instead, it's not. You're on lockdown. You download the pod. All right, Gottlieb, give me something that I don't love these fictitious brackets because there's so much hoop that wasn't played. And it's interesting. I think the outside world, it's like, man, I didn't have my bracket. We didn't have the upsets, the Cinderellas, even the Final Four. The insular world of college basketball, all of that is true, but not having the conference tournaments, like, dude, conference tournament semifinal Friday or Saturday is awesome. I mean, I would contend that Thursday and Friday, you know, like the Thursday of championship week, everybody plays. Everybody. It's literally the best day in college basketball. Crazy, right? And that was taken away from us or whatever. And I'm actually the last guy to be sitting here and telling you what our government should and shouldn't be doing with the NCAA. Like this is a first for all of us. So I'm not bitching and moaning and saying we should have played hoop. I do think it was weird that they were playing and then they're playing with no fans and they're like, no fans. Like, let's not play any basketball at all. When the kids were already there, they'd already traveled. I don't know. I guess you could have just played the tournaments anyway. But regardless, what's done is done and we kind of move on. But I just want to point out that, and I think many of you know it, or maybe have said it amongst each other, but haven't articulated it out loud in a public forum, which is, I get that the NCAA tournament Selection Sunday were canceled and we never had it, but not having championship week Thursday and Friday, where it's not like you get, remember on a Thursday of the NCAA tournament, you get 16 games. And on a Friday, you get 16 games. On championship week, you not only get three times as many games, everybody plays. And the games, in many ways, are all more competitive because they're conferences and sometimes it'd be ugly or whatever, but you don't just get Kansas or Baylor playing. You get Kansas and Baylor and Texas Tech and Texas. So this is unforeseen, unprecedented, and really weird. Now, there are some good things that come from it. Aaron Torres is going to join us, who's, of course, covered college basketball for years for Fox Sports. He's awesome, and he has a great energy and a thought and feelings about everything being canceled. I'll just give you mine. I don't think there'll be a ton of major coaching changes, and it's not just because we didn't have finality or because there's some sensitivity. I don't. Do I think that plays into it? Maybe a little bit. I think a big thing is these buyouts are big. And the stock market continues to dip. Dipping is a kind way of saying what's actually going on. And when the stock market is down the way it's down, remember, all of your boosters, these are millionaires. And as much as they're donating money to get a new coach in there for their alma mater, sounds like they're doing it out of goodwill, they're usually doing it with some extra money they got on the side. Nobody has that right now. We don't know the financial future of anybody's company. Outside of Amazon, which, by the way, has stopped making some deliveries in some countries, Netflix, I mean, any of the major stocks, all down. So good luck calling if you're Chris Del Conte of Texas and Shaka lost his last game to Oklahoma State. Good luck calling one of your major boosters. Say, hey, I know you gave $10 million for the new arena. I need you to give me a couple million dollars to fire Shaka Smart. And they're like, my portfolio is down 40%. Call somebody else. So with a paucity of major college coaching changes, there are some coaching changes that have been made. Let's start with the biggest name one, which is Rick Pitino's new head coach at Iona. Now, I don't know if I would want to play for Rick Pitino. I think I would. Yeah, I would. I don't know if I want to coach with Rick Pitino because he's a hard-driving dude. He makes his staff get in shape. You know, when you give scouting reports, there's no notes. And I would say that even his reputation, in fairness to his reputation, like part of the thing that people would say is, how could all these things be going on at Louisville in the dorms and you had no idea? His reputation was he had his hand in everything. I don't know if that's fair to this version of Rick Pitino, who was, like, the story I had heard from another coach who had competed against him was that, you know, when we played him at their place, he was gone before our team bus pulled out, which is, for a home game, that's really weird. Like, he wasn't as connected with his teams late as he was throughout the life of his career. He's a grandpa. He had his own friends. He went to great restaurants after games, and he did let his assistants handle stuff, which I think is a reasonable thought. The difference is that he had a reputation of early in his career, for most of his career, having his finger in overseeing everything that went on, including the body mass index of everyone on his staff. Look, he's at Iona. He's an unbelievable coach. Let me give you the Rick Pitino, why I believe he's the greatest coach in the history of the modern era of basketball. His use of the three-point line was way ahead of anybody else at the top end of the sport, right? Were there other teams, U.S. International, Loyola Marymount, that played fast, shot a lot of threes? Yes. But he was the first major college coach to embrace the three-point shot at Providence before anybody else. Of course, he brought that to the NBA with the New York Knicks. They pressed, and nobody presses anymore, but it began the era where teams were pressing. They did it when they were at Providence. He was also, you know, like Tiger Woods gets credit for being the first golfer to pay a ton of attention to getting into physical condition, right? The same could be true for the coaching of Rick Pitino. He was the first one in the 80s, Billy Donovan lost all that weight, to really demand incredible physical conditioning and have guys play at a lighter weight. Did they play small? Yes. They stretch defense? Yes. They play fast and shoot threes? Yes. And then when he was at Louisville, they also, when he's with the Boston Celtics, of course, they tanked to get the Tim Duncan draft pick. They didn't get it, and he drafted poorly, and he bailed on Chauncey Billups too soon, but he was the first to use tanking to get lottery picks for a shot at a superstar in the draft. So we got three-point shooting, you got conditioning, you got tanking. These are all things that are part of modern college basketball. And he won it, got to the Final Four at Providence. Won a national championship with Kentucky and essentially handed one to Tubby Smith in terms of the personnel. And he won a national championship at Louisville. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yes, his personal issues aside, his NCAA issues late put a stain on anybody's resume. But in terms of what he's brought to the actual sport of basketball, coaching, areas of emphasis, how you play, there have been no more impactful guys than Rick Pitino. And obviously, I think he'll win at Iona. It's a great campus, not far from where his apartment is in New York City. He's hiring Tom Bettamarco, who will help get him players. The guy can coach. They have good enough facilities, have great history. It's really sad what happened to Tim Kluse, who, a Long Island legend, who had to retire essentially because of health issues. Do I think the personal story is all perfect? Like, no. But in terms of basketball, Rick Pitino is unbelievable, and I can't believe he's coaching at Iona after not just coaching, but winning in Europe. Let me tell you about a couple of the other hirings, potential hires. Wyoming's hiring Northern Colorado's Jeff Linder. Linder, of course, is he's a Boise State guy, right? He's done a really good job at UNC, which is in Greeley. That part of the country, I think that makes sense as a hire, right? It just does. Does it blow you away? No. And I think it's going to be interesting. Leon Rice, whose team, they've kind of plateaued a little bit, right? Plateaued a little bit in a very, very tough league. It looks like Craig Smith is going to have to stand pat, right? Because no big jobs came open to drag him away from Utah State. So you got Craig Smith, but he'll lose, you know, I would guess he'll lose Nima Keita, I guess, who had kind of a wash of a year. And of course, he'll lose Sam Merrill, who had an incredible career and plays his last game and hits a game-winning three to win the Mountain West Conference Tournament title. That's a pretty good way to go. Would you prefer to go out in the NCAA tournament? Yes, but to go out on a game-winning three to beat San Diego State, it's pretty awesome. Linder's a really good coach. Really good coach. I think Leon's a really good coach. They're kind of going from the same pool, and the middle of that league is going to be a lot like the WCC, Right? Like the difference that, well, the reason the WCC is so good, I'll get to that, one of the jobs that's open in a second, is the middle. Like, everybody knows Gonzaga, and I think BYU had probably underachieved the past 5 years or so. And now I think Mark Pope and the energy, Chris Burgess and that staff, they're going to be obviously having Yoeli Childs this year help them. But you have their resources, their reach as the Mormon University. I think they're always going to be competitive at the top of that league. St. Mary's and Randy Bennett. So you got three big boys in that league. The difference now is San Francisco, Pacific, legit good teams, well-coached. We'll see you, San Francisco, who lose a lot but did have guys sitting out. But you're the middle of the league, even without San Diego and LMU truly being competitive. Santa Clara's good. Pacific's good. San Francisco's good. Like, you start to get six, seven deep, and you can see why the Big West is so down in comparison. Some of it is resources. A lot of it is resources, coaching. I think the Mountain West is going to be the same. UNLV will, they'll probably never be, they're never going to be back to where they were with Tark. But they'll be much closer to where they were, I think, with Lon Kruger. So if you have San Diego State, they need New Mexico to figure it out. And I think Dr. Weir, like, look, to have your two of your best players get kicked off the team and to still be able to survive. But you need New Mexico and San Diego State and UNLV to be your big boys. The middle of that league, Nevada, good, well-coached. Alford knows what he's doing. He knows how to win that league. And then you got the front range teams. Wyoming should be better, should be back. Colorado State, Utah State. And I know I'm forgetting like six teams. And Boise State, that's a really, really good league. The depth of the WCC should be matched at some point by the Mountain West Conference. I don't think the Mountain West Conference was a very good league this year in terms of talent. WCC probably better teams. But now that you're getting the depth of quality coaches who recruit four-year guys and transfers and have a plan, I think soon the Mountain West will get back to being the second-best league in the West, even though the WCC is clearly the second-best, and some people would think the best league in the West. I don't think it is. I think the Pac-12 is clearly better.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome him in. He's a college basketball analyst. He's been a college basketball writer. You hear him on Fox Sports Radio. He's the one and only Aaron Torres. Okay, Aaron, tomorrow, or actually today when this pod drops, we would have had games, and now we don't. How you doing with all this?
Well, you know, I'm doing okay. It is surreal. I was a guest on The Odd Couple from Las Vegas, the Pac-12 tournament, and Chris and Rob asked me, do you think we're going to play games in the NCAA tournament without fans? And I said yes, and they were both very surprised. And so to go from where we were that day to the following day with the Rudy Gobert news to now, you know, we're all dealing with it differently, but essentially the entire country on shutdown. It's surreal. It's unbelievable. And I do think in terms of the sports realm, college basketball will be hit the hardest because as of right now, it's the only sport that isn't going to crown a champion.
I'm going to take the other side.
Okay.
Only in that, look, losing the conference tournaments, a huge, huge financial hit. But you did have the season, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't play again until November or maybe December. And so I do think by then it will be business as usual. And for a year where we really didn't know who was good and outside of, you know, maybe Kansas, I know one really knew how good Dayton was in the grand landscape of things. We thought they were really good. But outside of those couple of teams, like there wasn't an it team. There wasn't an it guy. And I think the numbers would have been down for the NCAA tournament because of it. Now you got a chance to recharge and refocus. Maybe it's that actually ends up being a kind of good thing. Okay, so let's get to this. The ramifications of it. First thing is, I don't think any of the big jobs are coming open. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't tell you you're wrong because, you know, I think that, you know, what I've told everybody that'll listen to me is is that the college basketball world is very much in a holding pattern, just like the real world. And so to fire a head coach right now, what that means is you're probably, unless you're 100% positive that you have a guy ready to line up and take a job, you're not going to be able to interview anybody for the very foreseeable future. Keep in mind, current players are not on campus, so you can't really get with the players. And Doug, you and I know how all this works. Players at home, no coach. Well, guess who's going to be hitting up those players? Coaches from other programs, and that's tampering, but it is what it is. It's part of the sport. Oh, by the way, you want to hire a guy wants to upgrade the roster, but he can't bring recruits on campus until at least April 15th, and realistically, that's probably going to get pushed back. And so I think when you factor in that it's going to be really hard to hire someone in this environment, the fact that even if somebody is interested, maybe they're having second thoughts about how they're going to upgrade the roster. Oh, by the way, the little things like selling your house, moving your family, I'm 100% with you. If it didn't really open by now, I don't think we really see any of these major openings happening, giving guys like Danny Manning at Wake Forest, Shaka Smart at Texas, another season on campus.
Well, the other issue is, how do you call up a booster and say, hey, man, I need a couple million here to buy out a coach? And the booster's like, look, I just lost 35, 40% of my wealth because of the stock market. Mm-hmm. Call somebody else. Right, like that's a legit problem. What about the documentary, the Christian Dawkins documentary that's coming out in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see it. I've read the quotes. Dan Wetzel obviously wrote up a piece, and from what I understand, Dan Wetzel was prominently involved in just the documentary itself. From what I could tell, it doesn't look good. For Sean Miller or Will Wade, the calls that we all knew happened are actually played. I don't know necessarily that there is that smoking gun that is going to definitively give the NCAA proof that cheating happened or a school cause to fire one of those two guys. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping to see it before it premieres in a couple weeks. But I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's just another trickle-down effect. And again, in these uncertain times, I think it's hard to say definitively the effect that it's going to have.
Aaron Torres is our guest here in the All Ball podcast. Of course, you hear Aaron on the weekends on Fox Sports Radio. He's covered college basketball for years. All right, what's going on with Greg Marshall losing like half his roster?
it's a great question. First of all, that was a team that literally a week ago was on the cusp of making the NCAA tournament. And so you talk about trickle-down effect. Now, I tend to think that if this many guys were unhappy, something like this was going to happen. But if you can just sneak into the tournament, it's a little bit harder of a sell to those kids that, hey, things are so bad, blah, 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 maybe you win a game. I have no, in that particular case, any super inside knowledge other than that we all know that Greg Marshall has been a hard guy to play for years. And it's a little bit easier when you're winning. It's a little bit easier when you're in the Missouri Valley. You're recruiting a different caliber of kid, one, maybe with fewer options, but two, you're also just beating the you-know-what out of 28 teams a year, and you're going, 29-5 and making the NCAA tournament. So I use all that to just say that I don't have a great feel other than that he's always been a tough guy to play for, and now maybe you're recruiting a higher caliber of athlete, like I said, with more opportunity if they do enter the transfer market. And last I saw, I think we got five guys in the portal from Wichita State, including their second and third leading scores.
It's crazy. The American is generally a disaster. Like, that's the part that I don't think enough people realize. And what happens is, if you're a fan of the American Athletic Conference, like, whoa, we've had this team, we've had that thing. Like, look, UConn was dying to get out of that league the second they were in that league. Cincinnati didn't want to be in that league. Wichita only took that league because they felt like, the Valley had trended to becoming a one-bid league, and they wanted to get into bigger markets. It was their way of keeping Greg Marshall. We'll play against high majors. But, I mean, it's hard to sell tickets in Storrs, Connecticut when Central Florida's coming to town or when Tulane's coming to town, as opposed to anybody in the Big East. And for Wichita State, as much as they can sell seats no matter who comes to town, there's just a lot more energy and excitement over teams that are closer in proximity. And then I also think that the point that you brought up is a great one. The step up in weight class. Like, Look, you can be really good and even have NBA players in your team, but when you're playing against a higher caliber of dude every night, you're going to lose more games. Like, that's just kind of the way it is. Okay, let's get to a couple other interesting ones. Bill Self has fended off these Bill Self to the NBA for the entire season. Now I don't know how the timelines even match up. I guess you could go now because the season's over. Maybe it does change. Is Bill Self Kansas's head coach next year?
Well, you know, this is just another one of those things that is so in flux because of everything. To answer your question, like, I do think he is back in large part because when does the regular season in the NBA resume? When does it end? Are we talking June? Are we talking July? What are we talking there? By the way, this whole process in terms of the NCAA legislation, they have their notice of allegations. They've responded pretty proactively, actually. What happens in terms of getting that done? That's just one that I just think it's way too hard to speculate right now. I would assume he's back at Kansas. And listen, I'll also say this too, is, you know, there have been these rumors forever, and I know that there has never been a you know, like I said, a notice of allegations. There's never been a major investigation into his program. But until I see something a little bit more definitive, just in terms of it, you know, getting the sports world back on its feet, I would just say he's probably going to be back because, again, there's so much uncertainty with pretty much everything to do with sports right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No. It's kind of crazy. I guess here's my other thought. This is where I was taking the opposite point of view of you. It's not just that there's no games. It's like, and maybe it's because doing the radio show, we've been so overwhelmed by the Tom Brady and NFL free agency news. We do miss the games, but I'm not sure we miss the tournament as much as we thought we'd miss the tournament. I don't know. Like, when I say we, maybe I shouldn't include me and you and people listening to this podcast. I think America, like, we move on kind of quickly. Now, this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, going to be weird and different. But Monday through Wednesday is usually just bitching and complaining about teams that most people don't even know about, right? Like, I didn't even know Syracuse was on the bubble this year. Okay, maybe Jim Boeheim should be in, right? That's what it feels like Monday through Wednesday is. And then, you know, in terms of sports radio, you don't really cover the games that much as the coaches. And there's like a story that America gravitates to. We'll miss that. But it's weird. Like, college basketball's in this weird place where it's searching for national relevance in the landscape, and this really hurts it. And it maybe puts it in its place because it's not as missed as people thought it would be.
Yeah, it's totally fair. You know, I think that, you know, listen, here's the bottom line. Tom Brady would have sucked the oxygen out of the room under any circumstance. I mean, listen, the NFL draft does, you know, 10 million people during the NBA playoffs. And so I think the NFL always sucks the oxygen out of the room. I think that, you know, the NFL very smartly decided to kind of continue business as usual because there is nothing to talk about. And so, listen, if Tom Brady became a Tampa Bay Buck, it could be on the day of, you know, game four of the NBA Finals, and it would still be the thing that we're all talking about. I don't disagree that college basketball is kind of searching for its place, but I do still think those storylines do always emerge, and even if it is only for a 2-3 week period, like, it is a relevant thing. I mean, Ja Morant went from some dude that guys like you and I know to, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, and does Obi Toppin, the kid from Dayton, have that moment? I don't know exactly what those narratives would have been, but we find those every year. I don't disagree that it's unfortunately become a 2-3 week sport for everybody except for a few diehards and people that follow their each individual school. But I do still think we will miss the tournament. I think not having all this NFL news impacts it, but we're going to miss the tournament just to give us something to do, especially in the time when people have less to do than they ever have in a long, long time.
You know, you bring up a great point, though, about, and this has kind of been my argument about, everyone thinks these college players are, exploited? And I'm always like, look, the perfect example of why they're not actually exploited is the fact that none of them get a chance to promote themselves here over the past couple of weeks. You know, they don't become the household names that you become only through the NCAA tournament, right? There's a fine line between exploitation and promotion, and I think it's still along the line of promotion.
I would just say really quick, I have been on board with you on this all along, basically. There's no disrespect to a kid at Kentucky, but they're going to get 20,000 people in Rupp Arena, and there isn't a single player on Kentucky this past season that someone has said, hey, honey, we got to get to Rupp Arena to see this kid. Now, that's not to say that they don't have guys that are going to the NBA. Doesn't mean to discredit what the individuals on that team accomplished, but with all due respect to Ashton Hagans, who's their starting point guard, who might be a first-round NBA draft pick, like I said, nobody's saying, honey, you know, Ashton, or, you know, nobody in Knoxville is saying, honey, Ashton Hagans is rolling through town this week. Let's get tickets for UT Kentucky. So I'm 100% on board with you on that. I think it's easy to argue about on social media. I think the people like you and I that are actually on these campuses that actually see how kind of, for lack of a better term, the sausage is made, how the process and how the system works. I think more people probably don't realize that, but I think guys like you and I will continue to say that, and we'll end up being right whether people want to listen to us or not.
Who's the number one pick?
Listen, you know, my thing real quick, I think it might be Obi Toppin, because that dude, I know he's a third-year junior and he's 21 years old, but that dude was a star. And Anthony Edwards had his moments. James Wiseman, who even knows where he is or what he's doing right now. Like, I really think, and I think if the tournament had happened, I think Obi Toppin would have been the number one pick because he would have been so dominant. Without it, I think it does depend on the team, and maybe somebody quote-unquote plays it safe by taking the 18-year-old freshman over the 21-year-old third-year sophomore. I would not be surprised at all if that kid ends up being the first overall pick.
I would.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know if he's a high-level starter in the NBA. I think he's a good player. I think he's a stretch five. I don't know. I like him. I mean, like, I know what I'm going to get. I don't know. Like, I hear a lot of guys saying rotation big, you know, whereas they take a shot at the Wisemans, they take a shot at some of the younger players because they have a greater upside.
Well, and that's what happens every single year. I mean, Steph Curry, when he came out, was he a point guard? Was he a shooting guard? Where do you play him? Who does he defend? Dude, the two-time MVP, and I'm by no means saying that Obi Toppin is going to evolve into MVP-caliber player. I'm just saying is that the longer you stay in school, the more they pick apart your game. And we have now a pretty good track record of if you're not uber, uber, uber elite, whether it is James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Dame Lillard, whoever it is, stay the extra year, get the seasoning. The point that you always bring up, Doug, which I steal from you all the time, learn how to become a star. Learn how to be a role player first, then learn how to become a star as a sophomore, junior. More and more guys are having success with that route at the NBA level.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, last thing. If you were to bet your salary on who would have won the NCAA tournament, well, who would you put your money on?
I'd probably say Gonzaga, and I feel terrible. I didn't buy Kansas because they couldn't shoot threes and because the kid Azubuike, who they ran everything through, was a 43-44% foul shooter, and at a certain point somebody was just going to start following him with 6 minutes to go and sending him to the line. I thought they were really good. I thought they were deserving of the number one overall seed. I would have probably, without knowing what the bracket looks like, probably ended up taking Gonzaga.
Okay. Aaron, great stuff. Can't wait to hear you on the weekend on Fox Sports Radio. Thanks so much.
Doug, appreciate the time, my man.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, we'll have more pods regarding the NBA. And obviously, these jokes write themselves with Kyrie Irving in isolation, right? Kyrie and KD in isolation. See, they've already changed the culture of the Brooklyn Nets. But you are bummed out that the NBA is the only professional sport to have guys contract the coronavirus. But they all thankfully appear to be fine. They got to be quarantined. I don't know what it means for the playoffs. I think it could be awesome. Has anybody thought of the idea? And this was the same thing for college basketball. I mean, I guess you couldn't do it because of the time away in college basketball and school will be over, which school basically has been canceled. But has anybody thought about the possibility? This is just a thought. That the NBA should go to more of an AAU model. This is what I mean. Pool play into a tournament field. Like, why not? Right? We have to play 5 to 10 games before we get ready for whatever the postseason is. And so the tournament doesn't have to be a one-and-done tournament, but you do pool play against all of the teams that are in your division, right? So the travel costs are less, whatever, you get it going, kind of the same things as your division. Do pool play, and then you put them all into a field where everybody makes the playoffs for 1 year. And the first round becomes, you know, a 3- or 5-game playoff. The second round becomes a 5-game playoff at the third round. I do know that the reason that they like those elongated playoffs is because there's fewer upsets. You want the best teams to be the best teams. But these are some extenuating circumstances. All right. Keep your questions coming. We'll do some Q&A on our next podcast, which we'll try and have drop tomorrow. In the meantime, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.